This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Blessed trails.
Welcome to Blessed Trails. I am your host, Belinda Gale, and our show features interviews with wonderful guests, as well as gospel and patriotic music and songs that just plain lift your heart, most all of them with a definite Western flair. Our guest today has been a precious friend of mine for nearly 20 years, and I can hardly wait to share him with all of you. But first, let's listen to his rendition of the ultimate cowboy gospel song, the classic Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Riding out one dark and windy day, on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once somebody heard a red-eyed cow he saw plowing through the ragged sky up a cloudy draw. Brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. For he saw some riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-i-yo! Eyes were blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught him yet. Cause they gotta ride forever on that range up in the sky. Horses snorting fire as they ride on, hear their cry. Yippee-i-yo.
Again, almost 20 years ago, I was blown away not only with his performance, but especially his songwriting. He had such poise and presence, and his songs had a wonderful depth and wisdom. What really struck me was all of this was coming from someone the same age as my son. Obviously, I was impressed, but not only, I was not the only one. He has gone on to produce one amazing album after another. With mostly his original material, he has received numerous awards and accolades from not only the music part of our wonderful Western world, but from major Western magazines and movers and shakers in this genre as well. Here are two quotes I really like. Western Horseman magazine says, "He is one of the most talented singer-songwriters in the contemporary cowboy music scene," which is very cool. And one of our esteemed icons in Western music, Don Edwards, says this about him. "He is fast becoming the role model for the next generation of cowboy singer-songwriters." How cool is that? I believe that one of the reasons his songs are so powerful is that he doesn't just sing about the West, he transports you there. I'm so delighted to welcome to the show extraordinarily talented singer-songwriter, incredibly devoted father, husband, and son, and my precious friend, Bren Hill. Welcome to the show, Bren. Finally.
Thank you so very much. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. That, I don't know what to say after an introduction like that.
It's all true. I've been trying to get you on for a while, but our schedules have been going hither and yon, and so, which happens a lot when you have two people in the music business trying to get together, can sometimes be challenging. But good. Can you believe it's been almost 20 years since we met, Bren?
You know, when you say that, I think, holy smokes! I guess I can't. I just can't believe that it's been that long, but. We've had some good times. We've had some great times.
We have. And just, boy, your life has changed. I mean, when I first met you, you were just barely getting going. You just, I think, just come back from Nashville, decided that wasn't really your cup of tea. And you were at the Santa Clarita Festival. And I think that was either the first or second year I was there. So that was either 96 or 97 when we met. And you're just, you know, single and young and just going for it, and I was just like, wow. I was blown away, and that's the first place I heard Apache Rose, which I finally recorded after all those years that I loved it so much. Of course, I changed the name.
Yeah.
We girls.
What an honor.
It was so fun, but oh my, that was it. And I think, was your dad there at that? Did I get to meet your dad then as well?
You know, in those days, my dad was, he was my traveling partner, and
Yeah.
We've been all over the place, and I know for a fact, Belinda, he would want me to send his best regard to you, because we listen to your tunes and look forward to seeing you. And he doesn't travel with me as much anymore. I've got a 13-year-old son, I've got a 9-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, and they're all into other stuff now, and that's a little more fun than what I'm doing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, especially since you've been there and done that. Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into what your life looks like now, let's talk about how you were raised, where you were raised, and you know, where this love of the West and love of horse ranching and all of that, you know, came into play. And so tell us about your childhood.
Well, you know, I was born and raised here in Utah, and I live in northern Utah, about 50 miles northwest of Salt Lake. I grew up in Ogden, and kind of grew up with one foot in and one foot out of the ranching life. We had horses and ground we took care of about 20 miles from home, and it was enough to really make me want to live it. We went on big Western adventures, you know, up in the tall hills in north central Idaho and western Wyoming, and we did that a few times a year, I was just enthralled with the West, and, you know, I think part of that passion came out in, you know, in words on paper. And I started writing when I was about 12 or 13. I started writing cowboy. Everything I wrote was a cowboy poem. I didn't even know cowboy poetry existed, you know.
Wow.
I just would write these poems and short stories and things, and they were all cowboys in the West and gunslingers and horses and all that kind of stuff. And so about that time, you know, 87, I would say, 86, 87, we went to, my folks went out to Elko, and they took me out to Elko, where all these guys were standing up there reciting these cowboy poems, and it just so happened a few months before that, we'd been on a pack trip up in north central Idaho into the Selway Wilderness, and somebody brought along a little battery-powered cassette tape player, with a Ian Tyson cowboyography tape copy inside of it.
Wow. Wow.
And I know that first year that I went out there, Ian was playing at Stockman's and we went and listened to him. And, you know, that was it for me. I think that set me on the course of my life. And I've been playing guitar and playing piano and singing and writing. So it all just sort of came together. And that was what I knew. You talk about, going to Nashville in 95, 96, those years, you know, in Nashville, everything was, country music was huge, and all these guys would wear, you know, hats and crease jeans and big old belt buckles, but they all sang about, you know, broken love songs and honky-tonks and all that kind of stuff. And I remember I sat down in front of a record executive and an A&R rep and the head of the publishing for one of those great big record labels. I swear the building looked like the Taj Mahal, you know, and I played him a song called Lady Idaho. And the A&R guy says, you know, that's a good song and that, and you know, you play it good, you sing it good and all that kind of stuff. But I got to be honest with you, Brent, I'm not sure most of the people in this country know where Idaho is at or couldn't find it on a map. So I thought, oh, I'm in for some trouble here. So yeah, you know, you talk about meeting there at Santa Clarita, 96, 97, I just decided to kind of go for it and do what I did. And fortunately, there was enough of these gatherings and events on the rise that I could go out and find an audience, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sure glad you made that decision, because our music genre is richer for it. And I don't, especially with the way country music has gone, I don't think they would appreciate your music, you know, could really even get into it, because it's much more thoughtful than a lot of the stuff you're hearing on.
Well,
I tell you, radio these days.
Yeah, and I'm still not sure they know where to find Idaho on the map. So I don't know. They haven't recorded any songs about Idaho anyway.
No, they haven't. Well, one thing that I know that I've always really admired is that your faith is a very integral part of your life. And so I know you were raised in a church with a deep and abiding, you know, faith in the Lord. But I'm always curious with all of my guests, and I always like to hear, because it's so different for everybody. There's a point as you're growing up as a child, where the Lord goes from being out there somewhere, you know, you go to church every Sunday or whatever. Some people do, some people don't. But there's a point when it switches from being the Lord out there to the Lord in your heart and becoming very personal. Can you tell us about that? Was that a journey? Was it an epiphany? Well, you know, how did that unfold for you?
Yeah, a moment of conversion, I think, is what I would call that, you know, when you go from believing to knowing, you know. And really for me, I think that that came later. And, you know, I had a deep abiding belief, but as you say. But I think it was probably only about 10 or 12 years ago that went to knowing. And it came through trials, you know. And my wife, we had our second son, and he was an infant at home. My older son was home. I'd been traveling a lot. You know, we went to Texas and released singles in 04 and 05, and I would spend weeks away from home and family and, you know, weeks away from the opportunity to go to church with my family and things like that. And it was taking a toll on me. Sometimes I realized it, sometimes I didn't. I was out at California playing an event there that I'm sure you're familiar with. I don't know if we're able to it's the Rancheros thing they do there outside of San Ynez.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I went in my tent one night after a couple of shows there, and just started to read the scriptures and just had that concrete knowledge at that point that the gospel was true, you know, and I don't think I've turned back since. Amazingly, the few years after that, my life kind of fell apart. So I really, you know, there was times when the faith was all I had in the few years after that. So I'm pretty grateful for that moment of conversion, but it took me a long time. And, you know, it's one of those things where you know, you never go back.
Right. Yeah. Once you have that epiphany, you can't, and you know the truth. Once you know the truth, you can't go back to the way it was before. I totally get that. Well, that's, you know, that's neat, because that's, you know, to me, an encouragement to people who, you know, been in church all of their life and haven't really had that epiphany yet. You know, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when that comes about. So
yeah, I think there's a bit of investment on the front end.
Yes, yes, I think so too. Now your new CD, Spirit Writer, has that been born out of this new chapter of your life?
You know, yes and no to some degree. I think I have always wanted to make a record of the songs that I held near and dear to my heart from my childhood and you know, centering around my faith. A couple of years ago, on a late night radio talk show, driving home from a gig in the dark up in Park City, you know, I listened to some talk shows as I'm driving home to stay awake. And the host said, make next year, it was right around the holidays, and he said, make next year the year that you do all the things that you've always wanted to do, just in case something happens in your life that you don't get that opportunity. And at that point, I'd never made a Christmas record, and this was kind of the holidays, and I'd never made a spiritual record. So I kind of, you know, just drew a line in the sand that I was going to do that. And it took a few years to, as in the cowboy world, you know, you make a record and then you go out on the road to the gigs that you play, and you save up your money. And then if you get lucky in, you know, 18 or 24 months, you get to make another CD. So
Right.
It takes a little time, you know, it takes a little time to be able to have that opportunity. But that's kind of how that came about, is really just a determination to make this record. One other thing that happened is a very close friend, family friend of mine lost his youngest son, the Weston family. And if, you know, if you live in this part of the world, you know, the Westons from Woodruff and Randolph and Lake Town, they're the ranch family of that's sort of the ranch capital of Utah, and the Westons are all over that country. And And Norm's youngest son was driving home one night and rolled his truck and was killed. And that's where the song Spirit Rider came from. His older brother was having a really tough time. And so I wrote that song from his perspective. I say I wrote that, but that song was really a gift from the Lord. I was just sort of the instrument, you know, to get it out. But so a couple of things just coincided to make this record possible.
Well, I'm sure glad you did it because it's a wonderful album. And we're going to play one of the songs here. Is this one of your favorites from your childhood, Nearer My God to Thee? That's a wonderful old hymn. I hadn't heard it in a good long while, so I was delighted to see it on your CD.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been a favorite. I'll tell you what really happened is I found myself in a position where I had to sing a hymn. And that song, just for whatever reason, it translated itself to guitar, and I could do the finger pick. I could finger pick the melody, and I knew all the words. And so, in a matter of a couple of days, I just had this song pegged. You know, I could pull it off, and in front of an audience. And this was 18 years ago or something like that. But as over the years, you know, I think it means more and more. You know, I think it's a song that no matter what you have to go through in this life, there's a conviction that you are going to lean upon the Lord in those times.
Wow, that's so true. So let's listen to Nearer My God to Thee.
Nearer, my God, to Thee.
there let the way appear. Steps unto him, all that thou sendest me in mercy give. Angels to beckon me nearer, my God, to thee, nearer, my God, to thee, nearer to thee, nearer to thee.
Oh, that's beautiful, Bren. I can really feel your heart in that. That's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Ah, well, I'm just like all weepy here. That's so beautiful. Oh, gosh. Well, I am so glad that you decided to not go the country music route. And that, you know, we talked a little bit about that earlier, but what really was the definitive thing for you that made you realize that wasn't what you wanted?
You know, my uncle was killed in a wood cutting accident in 96, August 26, 96. And I had a little place out there. I was kind of going back and forth and had a commitment to a music publisher that I was compelled to fulfill. And, you know, I'd sit down in these little music publisher rooms, and, you know, they'd have a scented candle burning and a picture of John Lennon on the wall, and you had to write a 2.5 minute two-step for, you know, whatever artist was looking for one for the week, and try to make it a hit so the publisher could, you know, make lots of money and afford, you know, to pay you to go buy some more macaroni and cheese, you know, and
yeah.
Live in, you know, pay your light bill. And that's kind of how that goes. And so it was a tough time. I just didn't feel like the music, you know, was necessarily, it wasn't designed for the music to come from your soul. You know, and that's not to say that some songs haven't over the years. You know, there's been some great tunes that have come across country radio that came from the depths of someone's soul. But the way that it was certainly set up at the time, and this was the mid-90s, you know, when it was really a factory. And I just missed my life. You know, I missed my horse, and I missed the mountains and the sagebrush and the clear blue sky. And it all kind of culminated to a breaking point. You know, my uncle was killed. He was kind of an icon for me. Always had a horse for me to ride. He lived on some family ground here in Eden, and just the greatest guy. You know, just my dad's baby brother, and everything we did growing up, we did with him. And so it was one of these things where I'd never come home to family tragedy. He went out to cut wood, and his chainsaw bucked off a piece of green wood and came back and killed him fairly instantly. It was
Wow.
just one of these tragic things. He was 53 years old, and so I felt like I needed to be home. I packed up everything. You know, I was fortunate that the music publisher let me out of the arrangement there and was very gracious and supportive, you know, at the time. And I came back across to Nebraska. I went up to Valentine and played at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering up there, and this was about October of 95 or something like that, and you know, I played Lady Idaho and all the rest of my cowboy songs, and they just loved it, you know. And here was a bunch of folks from the heartland that were connected to the land, you know, ranchers, farmers, and they got it, you know. They could really understand what I was singing, and I realized probably then that they're, you know, my audience was not going to be through the airwaves. You know, I was gonna have to take this music to them, and and you know, like you say, fortunately there's some events out there like Santa Clarita, like Elko, and you know, Prescott, Arizona has a great event, and places where we can network and share our music and get it heard, and you know, it kind of runs from there if it's meant to be. And I feel fortunate, you know, these years later that I have been on that path. It's not been an easy path, and I, you know, it's not one that I recommend. I sort of meet these other artists, you know, that I've actually helped a few in the studio make some records. One the producer had a few times, and I tell him this is not an easy road,
you know, no.
But so rewarding, so rewarding.
It is. Well, one of the things I love about your music too is that definitely cowboy in content and feel and heart, but it has just a more of a refreshing edge to it, which I wouldn't necessarily call it a country edge, but just your instrumentation. And I mean, is that something you brought back from Nashville with you, or is that just where your likes go as far as how you produce your music?
Yeah, it's probably not from the Nashville influence, you know. It's probably more from being influenced by classic rock growing up. And I listened to Gordon Lightfoot and the Byrds, you know, everything from John Denver to you know, Marty Robbins and Merle Haggard. Growing up, my parents had those records, but my brothers were into Styx, and I had one brother that had all the AC/DC records and Led Zeppelin and all this stuff that rock, classic rock and roll, you know, Kansas, and so I listened to that stuff growing up, and I think it all influenced me. I really feel like there's an element of rock and roll in our music. I don't know if people realize that or accept it or want to talk about it, but our music in some regard, you know, is a little bit in protest of changing times. You know, we're holding pretty strong to traditional values and our roots and a connection to the land and faith and heritage. And I think socially the times are kind of trying to leave that behind. And in some ways, you know, I see it in the guys I ride with and the guys I cowboy with. And, you know, these guys that rodeo for a living, you know, they are convicted to a way of life that is not very heralded, you know, in this day and age. And so I think our music kind of has to be pretty bold. And that's probably why I try to introduce, you know, some of those things sonically, like, you know, a 12-string Rickenbacker guitar or, you know, a tube-stacked Telecaster, you know, in some of my music, along with banjos and, you know, dobros and mandolins and violins and acoustic instruments. Yeah. But I try to make it, keep that edge so that people can see that almost, you know, defiant attitude that we have to have to stay strong to our values and our roots and our heritage in this day and age. And I think moving forward, that's going to bring more people into the fold. You know, it's going to make our music appealing to a broader range of audiences. And and so I probably, you know, when I go to make a record, I think, you know, it doesn't really matter geographically where it is. I just think, you know, as long as I can get my hands on the people who can bring to the studio the sonic range of instrumentation and sounds that I'm looking for, you know, that's what makes a great project for me.
I agree. And you know what? I mean, that whole cutting edge kind of thing, and outside of the box, I mean, all of our present day Western music, you know, world point, you know, it kind of focuses and zeroes back to the sons of the pioneers as, you know, just the epitome of good Western music. But in their day, what they brought jazz and blues and all kinds of other things to the cowboy genre, to the Western music genre that hadn't been done before. So, you know, they were outside the box in their day. So I like to think you're creating a new box for people to point back to. You might, one day they might be pointing back to Brent Hill, you know, brought this wonderful element into Western music, and bless him for doing it. So
I appreciate that. I'll tell you honestly, Belinda, I appreciate that so much. I look at you know, my song, two of my songwriting heroes are in this genre, Michael Martin Murphy and Ian Tyson. And those guys, you know, we see them at cowboy gatherings, you know, they're wearing their hats and their boots, and we say, and they come from the ranch, and we say those guys are cowboy singers, but they are just literally great American folk songwriters. And they've written songs that will, that are timeless, you know. And I think, you know, if our genre ever points back to anyone, I think those guys have been pioneers and both of them mentors and friends to you and I. I think, you know, we've been very fortunate to have two of the greatest legendary songwriters that'll ever live in our genre.
Wow. Well, that's a wonderful tribute to them, and they are monsters. That's for sure. I mean, just monster songwriters, and just huge in our genre. So, but don't underestimate what you're doing, my friend. You're very humble.
I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. But you're really wonderful. Now, the song we're getting ready to go to. You talked about your uncle earlier, and I remember. I mean, I was so moved the first time I heard this song, and I've even had the opportunity to sing harmony with you on this song a few times, and just always just really have enjoyed it. And it goes to a much more simple instrumentation, and it's very moving. And this was born out of your uncle's death, if I remember correctly, and you call it the Hill Family Song. Tell us about it.
Yeah, August 26, 96, coming right up here. He was out cutting wood, and his chainsaw bucked off of a green log and killed him fairly instantly. I came home from Tennessee to family tragedy, and he was such an iconic figure and filled such a space in all of our lives and left such a space in our lives that, you know, we really had to rally together as a family and support each other. You know, it's been surprising over the years. I've played that song at so many funerals, you know, and probably didn't count on the fact that I was going to have to be doing that. But it's just been a source of comfort for people over the years in that similar situation. And really, I think, you know, where the rubber meets the road in our faith is when we lose somebody that we love, and when we have to just, you know, turn our hearts to the Lord and say, you know, not my will, but thy will. You know, this individual that I have lost in my life is your son or daughter ultimately. And I'm going to leave them to you to take them home. But in the meantime, you know, we're going to need some strength and some comfort to get through this. Cause I think some of those challenges, we're really not prepared for them when it happens.
I would agree with that. Well, let's listen to Hill Family Song.
We have been saved for these latter days. We have been made to follow his way. And there may be times we might turn in despair, but he is always there. And we will go on, and we will not fall. Not run, we will be strong, and through the darkest night stand and fight. Through the deepest pain our love remains, and we will go on. Battle of life, it rages outside, so we face the storm ready to ride. And there may be times we must stand on our own. We are never alone. We will go on, and we will not fall, and we will not run. We will be strong, and through the darkest night. Stand and fight through the deepest pain. Our love remains and we will go on. The day will come when we will be with him again. But until then, we must go on and we cannot fall and we cannot run. We must be strong and through the darkest night, stand and fight. Through the deepest pain, love will remain and we will go on. We will go on. We will go on.
I never get tired of hearing that song. I really,
you know, I'll tell you what, we got to do that again. Whenever we when we land somewhere together at one of these things, you gotta sing that with me again.
I would be honored and delighted, and I love how our voices sound together, so I would be thrilled to do that. Thank you for asking. So now I'd like to move into probably one of the most beautiful and yet most challenging chapters of your life, and that is meeting and marrying your beautiful Selena. She is just gorgeous inside and out, and your children, and let's talk about that. So how did you and Selena meet?
Yeah, marriage is challenging, but beautiful, for sure. No,
beautiful.
I know what you mean. I know what you're hinting to.
Yeah.
You know, challenging for her because she's married to an artist. That's the only thing. She's something. I met her at about that time, right after actually my uncle was killed, matter of fact, and that kind of lifted my spirits, to say the least. We're best friends, and you know, we have three beautiful children. She has never let me get discouraged, and you know, whenever I do, I guess she kind of lines up and kicks me in the backside and says, get up and go. And so she really just pushes me to be a better man, better artist, you know, to keep making music. And, you know, she's kind of in the music biz now. I don't know that she ever really planned on that, but she kind of got in here about December of 2009. And you remember a former manager of mine that had to take his wife in for end-of-life care for Lou Gehrig's disease, and we were
right.
coming out of the hospital with our son, who had just battled cancer, and so
right.
she got into the music business by default, and she's just a good sport that way, but perfect wife and perfect mother, and I'm just blessed beyond what I deserve to have her. I guess I caught her at a weak moment, Belinda. But,
about that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, you as you said, you have three beautiful children, and I would like to talk about your precious little Briggs, who's in the middle, and he's the one who was diagnosed with cancer at a very, just such a young age. In fact, I think Selena was pregnant with Cambridge, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, 5 months pregnant
yeah.
with my daughter, and you know, all that summer of 2008, Selena had taken Briggs from one doctor to the next, and she just knew in her heart of hearts there was something going on, and his condition kind of worsened. I, you know, every time I'd come home, I'd walk in the door, and Briggs would go get his boots, and he'd drop them by the door, and he'd follow me out and do chores or whatever, and we'd saddle up a horse, and you'd have to, whenever you pull him off a horse, he'd kick you in the face because he didn't want to get off, you know, and this was an hour after dark, and so I just didn't see it, you know. I didn't see it nearly as well. And mother's intuition is really something, you know, and
yes.
and definitely something deeply spiritual about a mother's connection to her children. And fortunately, she just knew that there was something going on. And so in November of 2008, she came downstairs one night and grabbed me. I'd taken refuge on the couch because Briggs was pretty sick, and she says, "I'm going to Primary Children's, and I'm not leaving until they tell me what's wrong with my son." And he was diagnosed with brain and spinal cancer. Had a surgery, 6.5-hour surgery to resect the brain tumor that was medulloblastoma between the brainstem and cerebellum. Medulloblastoma is the most common brain cancer in children under 18. 350 kids in the United States get it every year. That number is going up. And so, you know, it's not uncommon at this point. You know, there is some experience in dealing with it. There was probably two or three kids that had medulloblastoma at the same time. All of them, you know, I would say under the age of 10 that were being treated at Primary Children's. And so we kind of went headlong into that battle that lasted about 14 months. You know, and when I say 14 months, I think we're still sort of in that battle. Briggs had an MRI the other day that was stable, and you know, so far there's been no recurrence of disease 7.5 years later. And he is, he's really a miracle. You know, he was told he wouldn't walk, talk, or eat again. The severity of what he had, really just the size of the tumor in such a small kid, was really kind of profound and phenomenal, a phenomenal case. And he walks and he talks and he eats, and he went up on the mountain with me the other day, and he's just the kid that never complains. Wow. And just so blessed. But, you know, through all of that, we really, we had to lean on our faith. I mean, we just faced the possibility that we would lose everything financially, and I would say we would have if it not were for our friends in the music industry that rallied to support us and save us, fundraisers. Mm-hmm. We live in the same house. We live in the same community here. You know, we have a couple of horses in our backyard, and we have a great life thanks to really the service that was provided to us by friends and community. Fans and people that supported us. And Belinda, I will tell you that the greatest medicine for Briggs was the prayers. And I know that you personally spearheaded a prayer group and so many of those all throughout the country, all walks of life and many denominations prayed for my son. And I think that is what saved him, because he was not given a good chance.
Wow. Well, I was, I don't know if people still have access to the blog that you and Selena maintained through that whole process. But I tell you what, that was, it was riveting for me to read that, and just how open and real that you both were, just the process, you know, what you were going through, what he was going through, how you were clinging to your faith and through all of that. And, I was talking with our producer about the book. I said, I hope that Bryn one day takes all of that and somehow compiles it into a book. I think it would be very inspirational and encouraging to people that are walking that path of dealing with, you know, a child and or any loved one, but especially a child. It was amazing. I really do think that some of those blogs that you put out were directly channeling the Lord's words to the rest of us. It was pretty, pretty powerful, friend, really was.
I appreciate that. Yeah, that's the care pages. And at some point, I think we're going to do that. But, you know, we turned to that almost by accident, and it was really just a means of getting the word out there to everybody that was praying for us and so concerned about us. And as you know, when you're on the outside of something, and you care about someone, you just want to do something for them. And the people on the end, they have no idea what to do. You know, they don't know what the next step is. And so really that provided a channel for us to convey the story and those emotions and Briggs's condition and get people praying for specific things. And, and that's in that circumstance, you know, you say, well, prayer is all you can do, but prayer means everything. You know, it means, yeah, it's it's the greatest tool that we have, and that's really the big gun in these deals.
It is the big gun. I love that. It's not, okay, well, all we can do is pray. It's like we have this bazooka that we have in our hands that we can use for this. It's true.
Yep.
Oh, it's true. Oh, gosh. Well, and I tell you what, I mean, one of the blogs that I was just, as a mom, I was so wrenched with as a woman was when you blogged about Selena going into labor with your daughter, you know, leaving Briggside, delivering this beautiful little girl, and just within a day or so, turning her brand new baby girl over to the grandparents virtually, and
yeah.
Coming back and 24/7 by Briggs' side again. I mean, what an amazing woman you are married to, and what a touching, powerful story she is.
Yeah.
She is. So I was so touched by that.
You say turn that little girl over to her grandfolks. That is what happened. But she had a lot of time with her dad too, you know. And I became Mr. Mom with this brand new little baby girl. And I remember, I'll tell you one story. I remember leaving the hospital up there. We went up the first time that Briggs got to see his little sister, and he just had a bone marrow transplant. He was pretty sick, you know, but we left the hospital, and that little girl cried the whole way home. She just, in her car seat, I don't know if I got her too snug or what happened, but she just cried the whole way home, and it was just, I'll never forget that drive, you know, because that's one of those things. As a parent, you know, you just want your kids to be happy, you know, and for whatever reason she wasn't. I remember I got her out of her car seat and she, you know, got up on my shoulder and fell right to sleep. But those were challenging times. But yeah, that's if I know which song you're about to lead into here, that's that was early inspiration for this song.
Well, this was such a touching song, and I was so loved listening to it on your CD. I think you just really touched on just some really precious parts of daddies and daughters. So let's listen to your song, Daddies and Daughters.
What am I going to do? Little baby girl, I don't know the first thing about how you see the world. I never had a sister, I don't understand my wife. Now I've signed up to love you for the rest of my life. Daddies and daughters, cowboys and angels, it's a love so true. Nothing I wouldn't do for two sweet arms around my neck, a kiss upon my cheek. Little girl, you're everything to me. Growing up so fast, really don't know why. I'll hold you forever or until you wanna fly. 'Cause everything that's right and good and innocent and true is sitting here right next to me and living inside you. Daddies and daughters, cowboys and angels, love so true. There's nothing I wouldn't do for two sweet arms around my neck, a kiss upon my cheek. Little girl, you're everything to me. So take my hand, and hold on for dear life. It's a big mean world. Cover up your eyes and dream those dreams. Every little cowgirl dreams. Little girl, you're everything to me.
precious, Brad.
Oh,
Sweetest
thanks.
song.
I'll tell you
I'm
what's
so...
really
Go ahead.
precious is my little girl.
Oh, yes, she is.
Little Cambridge. Yeah, she's something.
She is, and she's, I mean, that curly hair, and she's just like just a little walking doll. But I imagine with two brothers, she could be pretty tough.
She gets tough. I'll tell you what, she rules the roost. That's how it goes. And those brothers mind their manners.
Good for her. And I have to say, I can so hear, that song is a nice little two-step. I bet that thing's being used like crazy, if it's not for daddy-daughter dances at weddings. I can totally see that as the daddy-daughter dance. That is just such a neat song. So, yeah, good job, Pard. That was really good.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. Down to winding down on this show, but there is one thing I did want to touch on is our dear precious friend that we lost in 2009, Kurt Wave. Gosh, we just, the three of us together, we just had such a neat relationship. And I know that Curly was really, really close to you and just thought of you like a son. And I just like for you just to talk a little bit about that relationship with Curly.
Well, Curly is one of a kind, you know, and just the kind of guy that about 10 seconds after you meet him, you'd love him. And, you know, just had that warm, welcoming spirit. And, you know, Curly was very supportive of me and my music. He wrote that song, Fathers and Sons, you know, that we recorded together. And Curly, I think, and I had as well as you, have that deep connection to our family. And faith is a part of that. I think Curly saw that early on as he met me and my dad traveling around together, you know.
Right.
He just had such a deep, you know, respect for that relationship. And, you know, sometimes, I mean, I come from Utah here. We're all pretty darn family oriented here, but you know, you get out in the world and people don't have that kind of relationship with their families. And some people used to razz me, you know, you travel with your old man, huh? And those are the best times of my life. You know, Curly never did. He always said, you know, that is so special and enjoy these times because they don't last forever, you know? And, you know, I'll tell you, just as, you know, as we went into that situation with Briggs, you know, we sat in the hospital and it was, during the Western Music Festival. And I obviously, had no chance of getting there. And
right.
I heard the story that Curly got up to sing, Fathers and Sons and couldn't get through the song. And, just thinking of me there, he'd known me since before I was a father, and so I'll tell you, he left a space that will never be filled. Currently, we have his music and we have his memories, and we had a friendship with him that will never be broken. I look forward to the day we can see him again, where I can hear you and him sing together.
Ah, I'm looking forward to that too. I'm miss singing with my pard. For sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you for
imagine.
Sharing those memories. Oh gosh. And I have a funny one that I remember. I will never forget this, Bryn. I forget what gig we were at, but we were done. And it was the morning that everybody was leaving, and we went in to have breakfast. And you were there with your manager, the one who was your manager before, and he was kind of this. He was a big guy, your manager, but he was kind of a quiet, introverted kind of a guy. And there was a guy, I don't know if you even remember this, there was a guy that was just being obnoxious a couple of tables over from all of us. And Curly and I were just finishing up when you guys came in. And he was, this guy was cursing and just being ugly. And Curly and I
remember his horrible language. That's what I remember. This guy had horrible language. And he had women sitting at the table with him and a restaurant full of women around him.
Yep. And so we had just left and you came charging out of there and you wanted Curly to go back in with you and haul that guy out of the restaurant and kick his butt.
Yeah, I was upset with that guy. And Curly and I were going to go take care of him. I was younger then, Belinda.
Yes, you were a lot younger. And finally, Curly initially, like, he started toward that, and then cooler heads prevailed, and he's like, "Pard, I'm in my 60s. I don't think I'm up to this."
The funny thing, you mentioned that, Blynn, and there was nobody around. I thought it was me against about five of them. I thought, well, maybe Curly will come back in here and grab a few guys with me. That was funny. I do remember that.
That was pretty funny, but oh my God, I have to smile. I remember that a lot when I think of you guys. But oh my goodness, it's been so wonderful having you on the show today, Bryn. And I know that people who are not familiar with your music that are just hearing it for the first time, I know they're going to want to get their hands on your Spirit Rider and your other CDs, and hopefully they'll want to hire you to come sing at some of their events. And so can you tell them where they can get hold of you?
Yeah, BrennHill.com, BrennHill.com. And the music's there and the story's there and the schedule, and I've got a phone number there and email. So I think I have a Facebook page, Bryn Hill Music, either way. But I just appreciate you having me, Belinda. It's great to hear your voice. We have had so many great times over the past 20 years, and looking forward to many more.
Many, many more. Absolutely. I'm having so much fun watching your precious little family grow up. I cannot believe Quaden is 13. That's like freaking me out right now.
Me too. And he's almost as tall as me, and he's an athlete. So he's traveling around playing in these competitive soccer and basketball tournaments. And I hardly ever see the kid now. He's kind of like a blur unless I go see him on the sidelines. And I'm going to miss two games this weekend, and that's probably the hardest part about doing what we do is you're not always around to see this stuff, but no, I will tell him that you said hello. I'm going to give them all a squeeze for you.
Please do, and all of them, Selena and all of the kiddos, just to miss you guys all. And we're going to close this segment out with your song "Land of No Return." So can you set that up for us?
I wrote this song about a plane crash that took the lives of some significant people, high-profile Silicon Valley executive and his family, and the nephew of one of my best friends from high school. And I remember I was looking forward to seeing my buddy. He was going to come to a show up in southeast Idaho that we were doing, and he called me and he said, "Jonathan's gone down on a plane, and we're all going to go up and look for the wreckage." They looked for 5 months in the River of No Return wilderness just above Yellow Pine, Idaho. And I've been in that country, and I told my wife, I just kept saying, I don't know if they're ever going to find this, I don't know if they're ever going to get this closure. And miraculously, they said the very last day before they went out and searched, they prayed and they fasted and they just hoped that they could get some closure. And on the other side of the world, somebody was looking at satellite images and saw a wing sticking out of a snowbank. Gave them the coordinates, and they went up and found the wreckage the very last day.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of where that song comes from. It's from his name is Jonathan Norton. He was a great kid. He was engaged to be married. He and his fiance were on the plane with her family and his family I grew up with and loved them dearly, and that's where this song came from.
Wow. Well, thank you again for being on the show, and love you, brother. And we're just going to listen now to "Land of No Return."
Through the veil, I can see my family's tears. I can feel the depth of sorrow as they mourn. My body lies in ruin beneath the stand of Douglas fir. And from their arms for mortal life I have been torn. But I live strong, and I love deeply on the earth. And I chose the road of righteousness and truth. And I held the girl that loved me, prayed for the one who gave me birth, as as I smiled and bid farewell to my own you. So let me fly again on unbreakable wings. We will meet again in the land beyond your dream. For though my life is over, there's no need for you to mourn. There is your dreams, for I am living beyond mine. I know now just how the mystery unfolds. Believe in God's eternal plan and know that I'll be fine with the love of my life here for me to hold. And praise the Lamb. I took my final breath. May those seven river mountains ever stand. For I lived a life of freedom and I died a cowboy's death. And there's nothing more to ask of any man. So let me fly again on unbreakable wings. We will
this has been. I hope you have enjoyed it as much as I have. And I even learned a few more things about my dear friend. I've always admired Brent's strength of character and his devotion to the Lord and his family, but never has it been so evident as watching him walk this journey through cancer, battling side by side with his beautiful wife, Selena, for the survival of their precious little guy, Briggs. Through their blog, like we were talking about, we've all been able to take a little piece of that journey with them and their family, and have been able to witness and walk through the epitome, for me, the epitome of enduring faith. And when any of us are faced with hardships, the easy thing to do is to get angry or to lash out. But as Christians, even though we can sometimes fall into that, it is not what the Lord calls us to do. In Corinthians 4:12, it says, "And we labor, working with our own hands. Being reviled, we bless. Being persecuted, we endure." And in 2 Timothy 2:3, we are told, "You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." Well, now that I'm married to a retired Army officer, I have a much better reference point for this particular scripture. A good soldier doesn't complain, doesn't rant, or get angry. They just quietly, patiently, calmly, and steadfastly move forward through the hardship. And the really cool thing is that for all of us, the ability to do this is rooted in the essence of who God really is, and that's love. In 1 Corinthians 13:7, we are told that love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. So the love of God truly is the strength that enables us to endure. So what can we do to tap into that strength when all feels impossible? In Romans 12:12, we are told to rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation. And here's the key, to be constant in prayer. Well, that's our show for today. I am so delighted y'all could join us. Thank you for giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest and my dear friend, Bryn Hill, for sharing a bit of himself with us today. And of course, a huge thank you to my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all that he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. And please remember, all of the fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio are archived for you to listen to. Download our nifty mobile app and take us on the go with you. So if you like our shows, please help spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today. And we're going to close our show today with a song that Bryn, R.W. Hampton, and I recorded as part of a tribute album to our dear friend, the late Curly Musgrave. I hope you enjoy it. And until next week, may all of your trails be blessed.
God be with you till we meet again. When life's perils thick confound you, put his arms unfailing round you. God be with you till we meet again.
God be with you till we meet again. By his counsel's guide uphold. Surely fold you. God be with you till we meet again. Till we meet, till we meet, till we meet at Jesus' feet. Till we
God. Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.